So Robin will be starting first, and they will be speaking on implementing school requirements for adolescent vaccines, lessons learned.
Okay, thank you. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay. And the first presentation was a great segue into what we'll discuss today. We are, Indiana, I should say, is one of the states that changed some of their school requirements in 2009. We had the chance to implement them in the spring, summer, fall of 2010. And Barb will talk on some of those lessons learned, some of the things we had assumed, and that kind of stuff. I will present an overview of the Indiana Administrative Code for immunizing adolescents, grades 6 through 12. We'll also discuss challenges related to the implementation of the law, as well as some of our interpretations of the law, describe lessons learned in meeting the school age requirements. Indiana Public Law 161-2009, Section 5, required the Indiana State Department of Health to adopt rules to require schools to required school-age children to receive new vaccinations. In 2009, Senate Bill 219 was implemented, and this is a section of that law. So the bill is a little bit larger than this. We're just looking at one of those sections today, and that is where the State Health Department was required to adopt new vaccine requirements. It was up to the state to decide how that would be implemented, when that would start. However, it went into effect July 1st of 2009, and the State Health Department decided we would have to implement that for the school year 2010 or 2011. Those new vaccines, what they required was a meningitis, varicella, and pertussis. In addition to Senate Bill 219, where the State Health Department adopted those rules, they were, again, required to decide the child's age for administering each vaccine, adequately immunizing doses, and then the method of documentation to provide proof of immunity. We'll see that with a few there are some, a little bit of wiggle room, if you want to call it that. Section 1, every child less than 19 years of age residing in Indiana shall be immunized against the following: meningitis, varicella, and pertussis, through the forms of that Tdap. Within Senate Bill 219, the State Health Department was also given the authority to require additional vaccines if they were needed, based on state expertise and the CDC expertise. The development of the school requirements was a collaborative effort between multiple agencies, our State Health Department, the Department of Education in terms of when that would be implemented, local health departments, since it was the local health departments at the forefront, taking in all these extra children right after H1N1. And then the school nurses, in order to work with local health departments and practitioners to implement some of those school clinics. Tdap required for all students grades 6 through 12. So when we look at our school-age children, the three new requirements are for those grades 6 through 12, so our adolescent into our high school ages. In Indiana in 2010, 25% of all of our pertussis cases were in adolescents. So we did indeed have a higher amount of cases that warranted some of that immunization requirement as well. Meningococcal vaccine would be required for all students as well, 6 through 12. In 2009, we had 32 reported cases of those invasive infections among our adolescents. And then a second dose of varicella would be required for children ages in grades 6 through 12. It's required, of course, for preschool and kindergarten. within the public school setting. However, now we are saying our children entering the 6 through 12 needed that second dose and or documentation either from a doctor stating they had infection or a parent's written documentation as well was taken as proof that they did not need that second dose. Adolescent vaccines given by our local health department, this is just from the health department level. It does not include some of our practitioners within our community, as they did do some of the vaccinations as well. We administered almost 6,000, and you can see the breakdown here, of course, Tdap, and our meningitis vaccines made up, we're running neck and neck for the most given. Funding for implementation came from American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds, which we were awarded $5.2 million, 317 vaccine funding, as well as $11 million was used from Indiana State Tobacco Income Tax. Funding for implementation was also based upon population estimates based on the National Immunization Survey, Medicaid data, and immunization data from the local health department. So depending on how much money was given to each of the counties to implement and give the vaccines was based on these numbers. So total public funds spent on school age requirements was almost $51 million, and we can see the breakdown on that chart with our TDAP at $8.6 million, varicella, $19.5 million, and then our meningitis, the most public funding dollars spent. And then vaccine dosage and doses entered into our state registry. Our state registry is called CHIRP. And a few disclaimers about our registry. It is not mandated that providers enter their data into CHIRP, so these numbers are not at all inclusive. This is the numbers from people who do enter into CHIRP. Some of our best estimates is about 50% of our numbers go into that registry. Okay.
Thank you, Robin. When you have any type of a new law, you need to make a lot of assumptions on how things may or may not happen. One of the assumptions that was made was that the vaccine distribution would be spread over a 12 to 15 month period of time prior to that 2010-2011 school year. The estimates of Medicaid, uninsured, and underinsured, there was an assumption that they were fairly reliable data. And what we didn't know was that when this law was passed, it was passed in May of 2009, just as H1N1 was beginning to show its head, so to speak. And so that law was enacted by the legislation, and we had no idea what was to come within the coming year with H1N1. We also believed that the state registry would reflect the number of doses administered. That goal was to prepare schools, inform parents, avoid last-minute rushes. And we assumed that the information regarding school requirement changes would reach the target groups. We also assumed that the initial feedback from providers and school nurses, local health departments, it appeared to be positive. So there appeared to be a fair amount of support for implementing the law. And we also assumed that with the outcome of H1N1 and the positive response of school-based clinics, that they would also play a key role in being able to meet the requirements for the adolescent vaccines. The problem with assumptions is that there's always the unexpected. We underestimated the population of underinsured, uninsured, and Medicaid. Some of that probably was a reflection of the recession itself. because numbers changed dramatically. We also had many parents who were probably well insured who came to local health departments and received vaccines that were public funded vaccines. What the numbers were, there's no way to know for sure. There was a lack of ability to communicate directly with school nurses. There was no direct school database through the Department of Education to work with school nurses. So you had to depend on the few schools that did have names entered into a data system, or getting the letters and information to the school superintendents and school principals, hoping that it would then filter down to the school nurses. Some school districts, it worked very well. Other school districts, not so well. We also found out that the input from private providers was really insufficient. There just was not enough input that was gathered ahead of time. And a lot of it, you're looking at the time frame that you're trying to put this law into effect as well. Some of the challenges. We thought that those vaccines would be given over that 12 to 15 month period of time. The reality, the majority of our vaccines were given between August of 2010 and December of 2010. It was reminders of H1N1 all over again. I can tell you, I got off the elevator in our health clinic one day with a cooler from my satellite clinic, and I could hardly get off the elevator because it was wall-to-wall people on the ninth floor. So we went back to our previous plan of H1N1, keep them in the lobby of the building, let's bring them up in groups of 20 and 30 so we can manage it for the walk-in clinics. Schools had difficulty verifying records due to the large volume of students and limited resources. Long lines, incomplete or missing information on the immunization records upset parents. We dealt with it all. Local health departments also lacked funding to hire additional staff to meet the demand. You know, with H1N1, we had the extra funds to do that. We did not have that initially with the implementing this law. We did receive grant funds through the Indiana State Department of Health, which were wonderful. The problems that we face at the local level is you have counties who have a very long appropriation process. In our county, it took us 2 months to accept roughly $33,000. So, you know, those kinds of realities that you face at the local level affected how quickly we could get additional staff, actual support to work with this initiative. Difficulties in prioritizing the need for adolescent vaccines and the need to provide the immunizations to our infant and child population. Balancing other public health needs and requirements with the demands for adolescent vaccines. And my staff would be very frustrated trying to say, well, I've got this communicable disease to investigate. How am I, you know, I can't help in the immunization clinic. How do you balance it out? How do you say, okay, look at those CDs. If it's not life and death today, put it on your desk, deal with it tomorrow as you get to it. Doesn't always help with the morale in trying to do that. We seem to think we can do everything. The increased number of uninsured and underinsured impacted local health departments in that shift from private to public sector. Generally speaking, we've always kind of thought that public health, community health, and that includes your federally qualified health centers, rural health centers, that about somewhere between 55-60% of that is encompassed on the public sector, 40% on the private sector. Those numbers shifted dramatically with the recession, and Indiana was hit very hard with our area in northern Indiana with the recession. Recognizing staff burnout, validating the work that's being done. Coming off of H1N1, everyone was already tired, and then you're going full speed into another initiative. We faced difficulty with media engagement. It's kind of like H1N1 was over with. Adolescent vaccines, oh, well, yeah. And it really wasn't until the long lines started to appear and a parent took a picture from their cell phone of the lines out the door lined up to the dumpster of our satellite clinic that suddenly the media was making multiple phone calls of what's going on. We had school clinics we had in the springtime. We also had free clinics in extended hours in June as school got out. Very poor attendance. One of the things that we learned was plan for procrastinators. Parents wait till the last minute. It wasn't until August, just before school started, that was suddenly the mass panic of, what do you mean I have to get my kids immunized? It didn't matter how many letters had been sent out to parents. It didn't matter how many school districts had put it on their websites. And certainly in your urban school districts, cost of sending out those letters, cost of even for web-based announcements and getting parents to read those announcements is a difficult challenge. Some of implementing those best practices. We have a multi-county immunization task force that we've actually had in place now for a little over 3 years. We started it looking at under immunization in our own county, and that has continued. Our other counties said, well, can we be a part of this? And it's been a very good outcome that we have had this, because we were able to learn from each other and share with each other our own frustrations, but also, how did you solve this problem? We partnered with some of our community health clinics, Every Child by Two, Super Shots. We partnered with other counties, our counties that were our neighboring counties, so that we could do school clinics where we had schools in both, like for instance, St. Joe County would have a middle school in another county that was still St. Joe, and they would have the high school across the street. We partnered together. That way it didn't seem so overwhelming. We used a fast-track model for adolescent vaccines. Fast-track, we had predetermined lot numbers. We had a very simple front and back form, fill out the immunization assessment. These are the three vaccines that we were offering. You did take a chance on missed opportunities for some of the other vaccines, and we would try to tell them, we need you to come back, make an appointment so we can get you covered with these other vaccines. Utilizing walk-in clinics, extended hours of operation, utilizing volunteers, student nurses, other health department staff for traffic flow, logistics. You have to have a great person who knows logistics. I happen to have a nurse who was phenomenal in that area. We also learned to use the state-supported strike teams to assist with schools and walk-in clinics. We learned that priorities amongst parents were not on the top of their list for immunizations. The school hours for school clinics, extended hours clinics needed to be held just prior to starting school rather than school ending. Funding for the initiative at the local level was critical. But we built on the lessons that we learned from H1N1. We learned to plan with those procrastinators in mind. We learned to utilize space that could accommodate large numbers in one area or alternate ways of entering and exiting. We developed partnerships with other entities that built some rapport, provided mutual support, and positive relationships. The one thing I did not have in here that I need to mention was that we worked closely with the Indiana State Department of Health. They were our allies in this. I could pick up the phone and call Dr. Duvey. I could pick up the phone and call any one of the immunization staff and say, help, or what should I do about this? Or, Jill, I'm out of vaccine. Can you help me out? They worked hours on end to support us throughout the state. In conclusion, I think that Indiana made a very bold decision to make an impact on the under-immunization of adolescents. The economic reality faced today may impact on the decisions for other states regarding the extent of coverage for these adolescent vaccines. We were able to take advantage of many factors that came together for it to work. Dr. Doobie called it the perfect storm. It followed the aftermath of H1N1, which prepared local health departments for the surge in capacity. The ARRA funds presented an opportunity for funding of the initiative, but it also resulted in unexpected challenges during an economic recession. But it also became the ideal opportunity for us to protect our children one at a time, and together we made a difference in the state of Indiana. Thank you for your time.